I come with a very U.S. perspective to this problem, and in particular, with a perspective that comes from how our Constitution divides up responsibility. I'm told by the association, and I need to tell you, that I have no financial relationships, commercial interests relevant to this presentation during the last 12 months. I was the director of the Colorado Health Department from 1976 to 78. And what was clear was that the state of Colorado advanced public health around issues created by the US's war manufacturing and war machine, which wouldn't have happened had the state of Colorado not intervened. The federal government was not interested in dealing with these hazards, and I will talk about three of them. The dangers in Colorado came first from uranium mining and milling on the western slope and the subsequent management of the mine and mill tailings. It was a kind of fine gravel that was left over after taking the uranium out and sending it out of state as yellow cake. And this was either very cheap or free, thanks to the Atomic Energy Commission. And lots of people bought it and used it under their homes, particularly in the city of Grand Junction. Another thing that was happening in Colorado was the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. The center of the plant is 16 miles from the center of Denver. And that is where the plutonium metal was being milled into the triggers for US thermonuclear weapons. Now there are, I think the number is 17 different places around the country that contribute to the production of nuclear weapons. And because we tend to think of this as very scientific, high-tech activity, I think people don't perceive this as it is, which is big industry with a lot of employees and large plants and a lot of dirt and filth and a lot of dangerous exposures. I also discovered that if you're not in occupational health, and I only get to occupational health later, you've probably never been in big industrial plants and seen how dangerous and frightening they are. The other thing that was happening in Rocky Flats is that there were fires and leaks, and tritium was leaking into the local reservoir, and obviously hazardous. Rocky Mountain Arsenal was where, until President Nixon ended biological and chemical weapons production in the United States, we were producing nerve gas weapons, binary weapons, where when the weapon is ready, two chemicals come together and produce nerve gas. When they stopped doing that, they stored the wet eye binary weapon bombs at the north end of the old Stapleton north-south runway, and that wasn't very safe, and they rented the plant to Shell Chemical to make pesticides. The state of Colorado challenged the federal government in all of these areas. The state had been complicit in the original activities on the western slope, so challenging them was new, but it became important to getting the problem cleaned up. The governor insisted that what became the Department of Energy, it was still IRDA when I was here, close Rocky Flats and clean up the site. And finally, we pressured the US Army, which operated Rocky Mountain Arsenal, to remove the wet eye bombs, and they sent them to Tooele Air Force Base in Utah. Look at these dots come from an EPA map, and they are the places where there are large collections of mine and mill tailings from uranium mining and milling. They are heavily concentrated on the western slope of Colorado. It's not the greatest picture, but this is a big mountain of mill tailings just above the city of Durango, where with a little bit of wind, this dust blows over the city. You probably know these dangers in general. Miners were exposed to radon daughters. The mines and mills produced this dust, and not all the uranium had been eliminated. The yellow cake was shipped out of Colorado, mostly in trucks. The tailing piles were left uncovered. The tailings were sold as fill. And in Grand Junction, we actually did a study. Stan Foster was the state epidemiologist and showed that people who had lived in these buildings with the tailings under them had higher rates of lung cancer. Now, the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant, plutonium metal, particularly when it's in a powder form, is highly flammable. And you work with it in glove boxes. And this is the size, this is a picture of the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons plant. This is not a little a safe installation. It's a gigantic industrial plant, and as I said, it's 16 miles from the center of Denver. My Google map, the A there, is the plant, and you see the center of Denver down toward the right-hand lower corner of the screen. They were spills, there were fires, there were the problems of waste storage and transport, and the people who were operating the plant were in fact not the government, but their contractors, originally Dow Chemical and then Rockwell International, operated it in what was called GOCO, government-owned contractor-operated plants. Now, to skip to the third one, which was, and I should say about Rocky Flats, there was a lot of community worry about this plant. There had been fires. There were higher levels of radiation beyond the perimeter of the manufacturing plant. Jack Cobb and others understood this problem well. Community groups were organized. And so to the extent that the state was involved, we were helping communities that were already very concerned about this situation. Rocky Mountain Arsenal, I think, never generated as much public concern, but Barry Rumack, who ran the Rocky Mountain Poison Center, was on my board of health, and it didn't take much talking to convince me that this was a serious problem. And I'll tell you that there were perimeter wells around there. We knew that the chemicals were leaching into the aquifers, and this was not a problem that could be allowed to continue, in addition to the nerve gas weapons sitting at the end of the runway. We did convince the U.S. Army to move those weapons. It was an interesting meeting. They flew two or three generals out here to meet with the governor, and I was included in the meeting, and they said, we've decided that you're right, we're going to fly all of these weapons to Utah, where we will then take them apart and decommission them. And they gave us the date when they were going to begin this transfer. And I said, gentlemen, do you realize that you have picked the starting day of hunting season in Colorado? And in Colorado, hunters have really high-powered rifles, and they drink a fair bit, and one well-known sport is to shoot at aircraft. Do you really think you want to be flying weapons to Utah across the state of Colorado in those days? And they had the good sense of changing the date on the plan, and the weapons were sent to Utah. The governor said to me, what are we going to do? Dick Lamb said, Tony, what am I going to tell the press at the end of this meeting? And well, I said, it's not really very hard. Just say, thank God I'm not the governor of Utah. And so that one ended fairly well. I can't say as the dealings with the Department of Energy were as nice. I went to Washington hoping we could get them to close down Rocky Flats, which happened a few years later. And I was ushered into the office of the chief of security for the nuclear weapons program, who told me it really isn't a problem. We could tell you everything that goes on at Rocky Flats. All we have to do is give you top security clearance. And I said, Admiral, his name was Admiral Starbird. I said, Admiral, you don't understand. I'm the state health officer, and anything you tell me, I feel responsible to tell the people of Colorado. Thank you, but no thank you for the security clearance. I think the man had never had anyone say no to the offer of top security clearance. But that came out with a happy ending. Here are the wet eye. Here's a picture of a wet eye bomb with a binary weapon. And what was going on, I think I've already told you, at Stapleton Airport. I didn't tell you what Shell Chemical went on to produce. Some of you in the occupational health field or those aware of pesticides know about dibromochloropropane. This is a pesticide that was used on worms in, again, fruit trees and other similar situations. It has an interesting characteristic that workers who are exposed become infertile, men do. And then you have a very interesting problem. The employer is protected because there's a worker compensation law. Workers' compensation is based on injuries affecting your ability to do your job, and I don't think anyone was prepared to interpret sterility as impairing ability to work. And so here were a whole bunch of injured workers at the Shell plant who had no recourse because the compensation law held the employer blameless in that situation. I talk about state advocacy because states do have a responsibility for public health within their borders, and that includes problems caused by the U.S. military and nuclear establishment. And I'm talking about this because I think public health people, a lot of whom are in state health departments, forget about that responsibility. And with a little pushing from the community, we can get state health departments to be more proactive and take on these hazards, which, as my colleagues have described, are very real. Thank you.
Were there enough objections within the state of Colorado to that kind of activity by the Colorado Health Department, saying that it was a disaster for industry in Colorado and for income of workers in Colorado? And how did you overcome those?
I think in the local community, there was a real disagreement between how many people were concerned about the jobs, and there were certainly many. But this is a highly populated area, and most people didn't work in the plant. And I think the public opinion was clearly in favor of closing Rocky Flats. Bob Alvarez, who I saw his name on one of Bob Gould's slides, also did some work which suggested at that time, and I found it very useful, to suggest that cleanup activities were going to employ, at least in the short run, more people than were currently employed at the plant, and this was a good argument.